Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit wholefoodsmarket.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli, and today we are here with Thomas Carter. Thomas is the beverage director and partner of the critically acclaimed restaurant Estella that opened up pretty recently down on Houston Street, quite close to La Picho. We're neighbors. Prior to that, he had been running the wine program at Blue Hill at Stone Barns, which I still tell everyone is the greatest restaurant I've ever been to, especially in the Thomas Carter years.
Agreed.
And has quite an extensive history in the restaurant industry. But this, I'm super excited to have you on the show, Thomas. Welcome.
Thanks, man.
Welcome. So tell us about the opening of your new restaurant, Estella, what that process was like to go from having this very steady, very kind of high-end, very desirable job in the industry. I mean, to be the wine director at Blue Hill at Stone Barns, incredible, to taking this huge risk. It's pretty brave to venture out on your own and do that. What was that process like for you?
It was a little insane, actually. I can't really gauge because within the month of opening the restaurant, I decided to move into the city and get married. So, I can't really gauge like the, it wasn't, you know, it was a little surreal, the whole process, you know, like opening up a restaurant in Manhattan, as you could speak to this, is extremely, taxing. But then you kind of like pile on top of like, you know, thankfully my wife planned the whole wedding because I mean, I was useless. And then moving into the city as well, so I could be closer to the restaurant. Yeah, but it was a pretty insane process. It was an amazing process, a huge learning experience, like personal learning experience and professional. Mm-hmm. It's huge.
And in terms of the location, I think it's an interesting location that you've chosen. There aren't a ton of great restaurants over there, but it seems like there's a big hungry population that would like to eat over there.
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's in the vicinity, I think there are some really good restaurants. There's some like really good staple restaurants. If you really look in like the perimeter.
What do you like to eat there?
You know, I'm kind of a creature of habit, you know, I have to say like on lunchtime, like I try to get over to Balthazar if it's ever possible once a month. Your restaurant's not too far away. La Picho's not far away. Pearl and Ash isn't far away.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
That's a couple blocks away. Uncle Boone's is all really good.
Those are all great. Uncle Boone's, I had a ridiculously good meal at Uncle Boone's recently.
Yeah, they do an amazing job there. Amazing. Really good stuff. But, yeah, there's some good stuff around there. And then the reason why we took the space, you know, it was the old Knitting Factory space and before that Nolita House. And on paper, I just think that a second story restaurant in an apartment building on Houston, to me, is like all like negatives. But when I got in the space, you know, I have a tendency to go with my gut, which is kind of how I found, or actually how Ignacio and I found each other. You know, I saw the space and I felt it and the energy was really good. You know, some places, as you know, in New York, you know, you have the fabled cursed spaces, you know, and those are around the city. But when I got into this space, it had like really vibrant energy and it felt, you felt very blanketed from the busyness of Houston.
Yeah. And tell us about how you and Ignacio found each other. I heard it was through one of your purveyors. Is that accurate?
Yeah, at the time there was this guy named John Magazzino who's now working for Baldor. And John was a frequenter of Blue Hill. And he used to have this company called Promethea who brought in like really good pasta. Do you remember this company?
Yeah, I do remember it.
Yeah. So he brought in like, you know, he had truffles, like he
went to the old Dressler with John Magazzino once. That place was great.
Really?
Yeah.
Dressler? Yeah. It's crazy. So, you know, I became close with John. And then when I, you know, this guy, Mark Connell, who owned Bar Botanica below, he found this, you know, he brought me on because he used to frequent Blue Hill, and then I went to his coffee shop called Bluebird, which at the time was, I think, one of the best, you know, one of the five best coffee shops in the city. And we were looking for a chef, so we kind of batted around some names. And then when I talked to John Magazzino, because I know he's very well connected and he's got a great palate, he's a great cook, he's like, you should talk to Ignacio on it. Like, I never even fathomed doing that. Like, I didn't, you know, Ignacio was leaving ISA, and then we met and we just all kind of clicked, you know. It was just like, it felt right, you know. And we kind of started on a working relationship because him and I didn't have a prior friendship, which is, I think, is good. Working with friends can be problematic, I think.
Yeah, yeah. It was, I guess, a similar idea the way that we opened up Del Anima. Gabe Thompson, who's become a close friend over the years, I met him because he was dating another one of my friends, and she said that, hey, you should look at Gabe to be the chef of your restaurant.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and now, you know, we're partners and friends, and I think that's great.
Yeah, I mean, when those kind of circumstances come together, you know, like, for some reason I didn't have any hesitation on this project. Mm-hmm. I don't know why. Like, you know, my friends are like, you really need to think this through. I'm like, I'm not thinking about anything. Like, it, when, like, fortunately, you know, it was the same thing on Blue Hill. When I ate there, I was Assam at Le Bernardin, and this is right before Aldo, you know. I was really excited to Aldo to come on and, you know, to learn from, like, the best in the country, maybe the best, in the, one of the best in the world. And as soon as I ate up at Blue Hill, like, it, you know, the meal, the experience, everything crushed me, their philosophy, everything. And, you know, I right there, I knew I had to be a part of it. And then I made a flippant remark to the GM, you know, if you ever need a wine director. And we got in touch the next day, and it was like a week process, and I ended up buying a car and starting to work up there. So I felt the same kind of connection with, you know, Ignacio's food is, you know, this is before I actually had his food, but just him as a person, you know, his food and him as a person were very, very connected. But, you know, his food is amazing. He's an amazing person. And the what, you know, to have this connection and also, you know, the circumstances, I had to go with it. So we did.
Yeah. And so going from Blue Hill, where you had this just absolutely insane cellar in an old barn, it was deep and extensive. Amazing. It's truly like one of the great cellars I've ever been to. Going to downtown Manhattan.
It's very big change.
And having to be very well edited. How did you kind of distill that down and choose what were the wines that you were most excited about?
Yeah, it's such a paradigm flip. You know, my cellar was, it was considered a really big apartment on anybody's front, like in any city in the world. It was like, I don't know, maybe it was 4,000 square feet.
Wow. And how many bottles was it?
I don't. It was a lot.
A lot.
It was like
inventory must have been a pain in the ass.
Yeah, because for a while I was the only one doing it. It was insane. It was 50,000 something. It was just insane. It was an insane amount of work, which was a really good training ground. But to go downtown to having a fraction of that and having a list. When I first opened up Estella, I wanted to do a list that was like about 150 selections. So that immediately for me, you know, at the time, it's so funny how you change your thought process like every day. And at the time for me, it was like, I'm like, okay, I'm only going to do European wine. So it's only going to be, you know, because I have an affinity for French and Italian wines. So, and then whites, German, like, of course. So, you know, because I love German white wines. So that were going to be all the wines. That's what was all going to be on the list. And then now I, you know, I look at wine very much the same way that I look at music. You know, I like all genres of music. When it's great, it's great, you know. I don't listen to a ton of country, but, you know, Waylon Jennings, Merle Haggard, you know, like, you know, I don't listen to a ton of folk, but, you know, Pete Siegel, like, this is amazing stuff. So how could I disparage American wines, you know? So I'm starting to incorporate some producers like Arno Roberts.
And, mm-hmm. Arno Roberts, yeah.
That I really find to be quite compelling. I'm going to start incorporating those in the list as well.
Yeah. And so the list when you first opened was all European, and now that there's going to be a little bit more American. Is that the idea?
A little bit, yeah.
And then in Europe is obviously, you know, quite large. But where were your... where were your focuses, and what do you think kind of paired best with Ignacio's food?
You know, his food is super bold and market-driven and bright, good acid. And his food very much is, it's not built, I mean, this is from my perspective, it's not built in, you know, like, you know, I think when I was coming up and cooking, you know, at school, you know, when I went to culinary school, you know, food was, you know, you're taught these mother sauces, and food was very much built in the grounding of, you know, like balancing the fatty sauces with acid and whatnot. And I think that's, you're seeing a little bit of different, actually quite a bit of different structure in food nowadays. And I think wine is following suit as well. But you don't see the fatty foods anymore with high acid. Now you just see the structure of food being a little thinner. And like you have all this flavor, high acid, leaner, brighter dishes. So wines that go with that are still wines that I love, you know, Northern Italian wines, even like mountainous regions or like high altitude regions, even in Sicily, like all these great Etna wines go with this food really well. Satellite regions of Burgundy go really well. Even Burgundies go really well. It's just, you know, sometimes Burgundy to drink really well, you know, you require some finances. It's expensive. But, you know, you can go into 70 of the Bone or I love the Languedoc with the food there, or Sherry's or once again, German whites go extremely well.
Yeah, one of the things I loved about your list at I love about your list at Estella is that I think there are a lot of really good values. There are wines that can suit many different palates, but you know, there's a lot of stuff that I want to drink. And usually, when I go out to drink, I'm not a big spender on wine.
Yeah,
so.
Me either. I'm a cheapie.
Yeah, so finding some great like $60 bottles, $50 to $70 bottles like that I think is very appreciated, especially with food that is so, like, you know, it's really sophisticated. It's really pretty. It's really delicious food. So
yeah.
I appreciate that about your list.
Yeah, it was a really interesting learning experience because, you know, going from, you know, being a somm at like DeCostel or Bernardin and then Blue Hill, there's a certain bracket of wines that you're looking at, although you're looking at all different wines. But here, if I eliminate that, you know, that very top tier wine, and I'm not even looking at those wines anymore, I just don't have the budget for them. But there are equally as exciting wines and very affordable, which is a huge learning experience for me. You know, just seeing all these wines and not even tasting the, you know, wines that would cost me like between $100 and $300 or $50 and up. Now, looking at all these wines that cost me significantly less, I just find the same emotion is conveyed in these wines, which is extremely eye-opening.
Do you miss, I don't know how much, you know, First Growth Bordeaux or Grand Cru Burgundy are opening up, but do you miss the opportunity to taste those, or do you feel like you had your share and it'll be a rare but a more appreciated pleasure now?
I think it's a little bit more rare and appreciated pleasure, I think. Yeah. You know, like, I don't miss it, but I still, you know, I still remember great bottles, and I still get a chance to drink some of them, some, you know, here and there, but it's not something I'm completely interested in anymore. You know, I'm not as, like, enthralled and as excited about opening up, like, or, you know, like, selling big, you know, like really expensive Burgundy, which is, you know, it's all great. I mean, it's all good. It just depends on the environment, you know, and for me, it just doesn't have as much of a place, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I hear you on that one. We definitely try to focus on the more affordable wines. And, I just got back from the Palais and there was just, you know,
it's insane.
Insane. There's just so much great Burgundy around, and that's more Burgundy than I drink the entire rest of the year combined. But I hear you on that. We're actually going to take a quick commercial break. We'll be back with more of Thomas Carter, the partner and beverage director at Estella, in just a short bit.
Today's music is by The Hollows on heritageradionetwork.org. My love.
hands were burgundy when last she came to me. Her fingertips dripped rubies that bloomed upon her sleeve. The harvest moon, an ivory wound that spilled its ghostly stream. My lips formed a question.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Are you a locavore? Our Northeast regional forager for Whole Foods Market sure is. She spends her time traveling around the New York City metro area sourcing the best new or interesting artisanal and handcrafted local products for our purchasing teams at the local store level. Part of our commitment to our local suppliers includes assisting them with the process of getting their products sold at our stores. Whether it's suggesting packaging designs, pricing, or distribution methods, she's helping some of the area's best new products reach savvy shoppers at Whole Foods Market stores. Today, New York. Tomorrow, the world. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
Back on In the Drink with Thomas Carter of Estella. Now, Thomas, you guys just recently launched a new brunch. I am a huge fan of brunch. I love it.
Really?
I'm one of the few people in the restaurant industry who will admit to that out loud, I think.
Blasphemy.
I am proud to say I love eggs. I love coffee. I love brunch cocktails. I love bacon.
I love an egg. I mean, I love all that stuff too, but you know, like sometimes in the moment, it's a little crazy.
Yeah. 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 I mean, I don't like working brunch. Like, no one else likes working brunch or waiting in line for brunch. But once I'm there, I'm a happy camper. But what are you guys doing for brunch? And more specifically for In the Drink, what are you drinking for brunch?
So what are we doing for brunch? And then what are we drinking for brunch? Okay. So the brunch menu is pretty insane. As you would imagine, egg doesn't do anything just like it's, not to disparage Silver Dollar pancakes, but it's not really that kind of brunch. There's a sandwich there that, you know, when it's like this Danish pastry, egg, avocado. It's just like, it makes you want to do something besides just eat the sandwich. I don't know. It's insane. So, like, the food is pretty amazing. I just think with brunch, I just think you should just skip Bloody Marys and go straight to champagne. I know it's like an American favorite is the Bloody Mary. I think it's good. It's just something I've never really gotten into. But champagne, I just feel like champagne is a natural with brunch. Like, just skip everything else. Cocktails, too, of course. I think cocktails are great at brunch. But, you know, like a Ramos Fizz, I think, like a classic. Mm-hmm. Like,
I hear you. We do a great Bloody Mary contest. People tend to come out and support it very strongly. But me, for brunch, I like sparkling wine if I'm going to be drinking alcohol. I feel like it inspires hunger. It's just awesome.
I just find that each alcohol has a different high or buzz, and each wine does too. You know, if it's old, if it's young, depending on the region, red, white, champagne or sparkling wine, definitely. And, you know, nowadays in the style of like sparkling wines, it's not like this as much of a cocktail as it used to be in the past. I mean, because, you know, champagne is a cocktail, you know, it's like sugar. You have sugar and brandy or whatever it is in there anyway. So it essentially is a cocktail, but nowadays you're looking at sparkling wine, and that's why, you know, people would get like headaches and like, oh, it goes straight to my head. Well, you know, nowadays they happen to be more wines with bubbles, you know, which is great, you know.
Yeah, much drier, much more vinous, site-specific wines. Do you have a champagne that is kind of your house champagne? I know there's so much great variety out there.
Yeah, there is. There's a ton. The one that we do by the glass, we kind of go in and out of different producers. But, you know, I think we were doing one from LaSalle, which is out of IPO's book, which is quite good. But actually, I'm really, you know, for the price point and everything, I'm really impressed by this one from the Canary Islands called Bermejos. And it's Malvasia. It's obviously not a champagne, but it's really mineral laced and good drive. It's great.
Yeah.
I
love that wine too. I mean, I think a lot of the things that you, when you have kind of those traditional method sparkling wines from other places other than Champagne, you miss out a lot of times on either the acidity or the minerality that you get in Champagne. But with the Vermejos, it's got kind of all of that and then something else.
Yeah, totally. It's because I just feel like when they do method Champenois in a different region or country, they're trying to do it in like the old, you know, grand style Champagne house, where these guys are doing it like, they almost do it like Cedric Bouchard was like in Canary Islands making Champagne.
Yeah, just know? Lean, yeah, crisp. All right, so I know you're a big music aficionado.
aficionado is the right terminology, but I do like music.
And so you have a lot of vinyl at home?
I do. I've kind of slowed down because of work. I just haven't had a chance to like sit down and listen. But yeah, I don't know. I think I've amassed like not that much, and you know, considering some other collectors, but like I don't know, 1,500 albums, maybe a little bit more.
I think that for living in New York City, I think that's pretty significant.
Yeah, my wife is not too pleased with that.
So we just did a winemaker dinner at Lartuzzi with Bruno De Conchilis, who is a big lover of jazz, and we paired each course with a jazz album. We did some Ella Fitzgerald with his Fiano Perella, Miles Davis with his wine Salim, which is inspired by Miles. So what I would like to do for you is to either mention some iconic wines.
And then try to do music to it.
Right. And then we'll also mention some musicians and see if you could choose a wine that you'd like to...
Really putting me on the spot here. All right.
Let's start with some Jimi Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix. Wow. So really cerebral, lots of drive. You know, I would say Jimi would be like Cornelisian, you know? Like really dense, packed, you know, like really strong riffs. Yeah, I would say Mount Etna, Frank Cornelisian. I could be wrong, but that sounds like a good match to me.
That sounds like a good match. Definitely a little funky and a little off the, you know.
Yeah.
Can't keep it all in control.
Totally. Totally.
All right, so let's flip it over and let's do one of the greatest Rieslings in the world, the Clos St. Huon Riesling from Alsace. Dry, age-worthy Riesling.
Wow, super linear, no mallow. Lots of drive. I don't know. That's a harder genre because you can go into a couple different, or a harder wine because you can go into a couple different genres, but you could go like jazz, like a Lee Morgan kind of style, like really driving trumpet. You could even go to Miles Davis, where you have that piercing, you know, like the acidity, and that's kind of piercing. So is his trumpet. You could go class. You know what? With that wine, I'm gonna say Arvo Pärt, which is an Estonian composer.
Arvo Pärt.
Yeah.
Wow. I'm going to look up Arvo Pärt right after this show.
He's amazing. It's a little abstract, but he really, like, it's a little ominous, but really uplifting as well. Yeah.
And now let's do something a little bit more contemporary than Jimi Hendrix. How about the Beastie Boys?
Wow. You know, we are...
Is there any wine to go with the Beastie Boys?
Well, see, this is kind of a loaded question because we both know Mike, and we know he likes wine, so I know what they drink. You know, I know they're big Burgundy buffs, but I don't feel like Burgundy encapsulates the Beastie Boys.
I agree with you on that.
Yeah, I don't know if wine encapsulates what their music is. I think it's something different. I feel like they're, you know, I think it's if it's anything, it's got to be Champagne.
It's got to be Champagne,
right?
I agree.
And it's not like one of the big. It's not like Krug. Maybe it's DP, because Beastie Boys at this point are kind of a classic.
Yeah. You know?
Maybe it's. I mean, I think the Beasties would all like Dom Pérignon.
Dom Pérignon. I agree with you. Or maybe even like the eccentric Bouchard you mentioned before. Yeah. A little bit rebellious, a little bit off the.
Yeah, totally.
But
he's had to fight for his right to party. I'm sorry.
And now, how about let's talk about one of these Sicilian wines that you really like, a high altitude. Let's go with Arianna Occhipinti Frappato.
Wow. She's great. She's a great wine. That's a hard one, Joe. It's really hard.
I should have prepped you for this.
I don't know. She's kind of folky. There's such a purity and honesty to her wines, right? They're so focused, and especially under the natural blanket, they're so void of faults, you know.
Something kind of folksy with a sweet,
yeah, maybe, but voice. Like really pure. I don't know. That's a hard one. That's a hard one for me because I don't listen to a ton of folk. I should, but I don't. It's definitely not Pete Seeger. I don't know, Joe. That's stumping me. Who do you think with that one?
Maybe Regina Spektor.
Yeah, I don't listen enough of her music.
my producers are cracking up over that one. So we will. let's post that on the Twitter and see if anyone has any good Ariana Occhipinti frappato and music pairings,
yeah,
and
we
can maybe join a discussion later on today.
Nice.
But thank you for playing along. That's been really fun. So what plans do you guys have coming up for the future?
Hopefully keep the restaurant open. that's the primary future plan. And then I don't know, see what happens. You know, maybe another project. We'll see. You know, it's just I really, we both really want to make this place continually moving forward and great as we can. You know.
Yeah. Well, it is already great, so I look forward to continuing to try to improve it, which is hard to imagine. You guys have been doing a killer job. Not only do I love it, but I've a ton of people I know in the industry have been saying great things. You got Alan Richman to write nice things about it, and I didn't even know he still likes food, so that is pretty impressive.
I've seen him eat, like, on four occasions. I've actually seen him eat. And he really likes wine.
Yeah.
No, that's nice of you to say, especially when you're in it, and as you could probably attest to, all you see is the problems, you know? And you don't, like, it's nice to hear other perceptions. Like, I feel like there's so much to work on every day, and still tightening the bolts so the wheels don't fall off, you know? But it's good to hear that it's being received. We're very lucky, I would say.
And are you at a point now where you have a little bit more of a work-life balance, and you're able to cook and be at home with your wife a little bit more?
Yes and no. I kind of find that once I get to a certain level, I feel like then I'm like adding more stuff on, which is good. It's just like, it's kind of my nature. But no, I wouldn't say there's more balance, but there's more room for me to fit things in that I still love. Like, you know, I would love to start listening to music again. Mm-hmm. I mean, like at my house, like and cooking, you know, I think cooking at home is maybe one of the best things in the world.
Yeah. And last thing, do you ever get a chance to go to art galleries? I know that you got your degree in art.
Yeah.
Is that something that features into your life in New York City at all?
Well, you know, now that I don't have to, spend so much time in the car going up to Blue Hill, it does allot me much more time to, like, you know, in the middle of the day, I could, you know, hop over to Chelsea or go to David's Werner Gallery. And, you know, the great thing about this restaurant is, like, you know, like, all my heroes are coming into the restaurant. Like, you know, Chan Marshall from Cat Power came in twice this week with Mike D, you know, so it's like, you know, these are people that I've been listening to her albums for years. And, like, the head of Matador Records comes in and, like, you know, different artists here and there come in, you know, and it's great. And yes, I can kind of get out and go to a show or something if I need to, or if I want to, rather.
Thomas, I feel like you are the ultimate Renaissance man. You have art, music, you've cooked at great restaurants, wine director at Blue Hill Stone Barns, now open up your own place, hopefully you consider yourself a friend of mine as well, because I look at you
Thanks,
as a
buddy.
Friend. So truly a pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks, Joe.
Thank you so much. And for all of you listening, I definitely encourage you to check out Estella. I will be going in personally for brunch in the near future. I'm excited to check it out, but dinner is fantastic. I can vouch for that myself. And thanks to all of you for listening. This has been In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website, or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.